you have a practitioner or somebody that you're working with or your medical provider and they ignore, dismiss, or gaslight you, they're not your advocate, right? So number one, doctor, the word doctor means teacher, first and foremost. So if your practitioner is not teaching you, right, how to live a better life, how to become healthier, how to do those things, they're missing the point of the actual experience in the actual profession. They're not working on your side. So that's super important.
Welcome to the Menopause Mastery Podcast, a show for women just like you who are ready for more health, vitality, passion, living life with a purpose. I created this show because I knew that women just like me in this second season of life, the season of menopause, are really tapping into their deepest desires. And we're ready to harness our physical and mental health and explore what our true passions are and peel back the layers to uncover exactly what we want out of life. I'm your host, Betty Murray, part geek, part magician, and your new medical bestie with a dash of sass. I love taking the complex science and making it easier to integrate into daily life. So let's join the journey to make this season the best ever.
Why am I so fatigued? Today, we're diving deep into a topic that confuses many and is frustrating for most. It's the truth about adrenal fatigue and what's really going on with the body. Welcome to Menopause Mastery. We're diving deep today into that topic, and it's confusing and frustrating for so many. And I know on this podcast, I talk a lot about fatigue and adrenal function and obviously hormones, but I want to go a little deeper today because I don't think we can go enough into this topic. So let's start with why this matters. Fatigue, exhaustion, relentless searches for energy, waking up and feeling like you have to peel yourself out of the bed. All of these are things that I hear every day from our clients and patients within our clinic and my programs that we do nationally. And it's just a ongoing, relentless problem. And I think there's many reasons why it tends to be that way. So the first thing I want to debunk is the idea that there is a thing of adrenal fatigue. Adrenal fatigue often pops up as the culprit. It's been, you know, said millions and millions of times, and it's from a book that was written back in the 90s. And here's the twist. You know, number one, the medical community as a whole, particularly conventional medicine, doesn't really acknowledge the term adrenal fatigue. So if any of you have ever asked your primary care physician, I'm sure they scoffed and laughed in your face and said it doesn't exist. So the real idea is there's a reality going on here, but it is not that your adrenals have crapped out. That's not really what's happened here. And we're going to go into it today so you can understand it. And we're going to go into it so you understand how to fix it. So what are some of the symptoms of this fatigue? Tiredness, exhaustion, brain fog, inability to stay awake after lunch. You know, you sit down on the couch after dinner and you pass out before you even start binge watching something on Netflix. You don't have the energy to go through the day and do the things that you need to do. You don't engage in social experiences and things that you love to do because you don't have the energy at the end of the day to do it. And for many of us, it also means that we aren't engaging with our family and loved ones in the way that we would like to. You know, we may not be intimate with our partners. We may not be experiencing our relationship with our children that we want to. Or if you're like me in my case, and you're also caring for an ailing parent, that becomes an extra burden and you don't use that opportunity in the same way to be really present to the experience because you're just dragging your ass out of bed every day. So the popularity of adrenal fatigue, particularly in my world, the integrative and functional medicine world, gets a lack of recognition. Like I said, Western medicine does not acknowledge it. And often they gaslight you when this happens. So they make you feel like it's something in your head or you're a little bit off your rocker. And if you're not watching me, I'm doing air quotes here. We are constantly dismissed, particularly as women, because this is definitely more prevalent in women. And then this just adds to our frustration and our ongoing sort of initial experience with medicine that makes us want to kind of step away. So let's talk about one of my clients, Alexandra. And I want you to really imagine Alex as someone just like you. She's got to peel herself out of bed. She hits the snooze button 3 or 4 times in the morning. She sets it 45 minutes early so she can do that because it takes everything it has for her to get out of bed. She has chronic fatigue, brain fog. She has obviously unexplained weight changes, because I'm going to explain that. There's some things that go on there as well. She has such an extraordinary afternoon fatigue that she often finds herself grabbing sugar and other things that give her a short-term boost. And she also experiences a lot of just losing her words, not being able to stay present in meetings. And she feels like it's starting to affect her life and starting to affect her experience at work. And I know Alex's story is just like everybody else. You know, it's not just heartbreaking, because you can see how this is really setting into a situation where she's just going through the motions every day and she's trying to get on with her life. And she's really on a journey, sort of facing shadows every day. And I think, you know, if I could calculate how many people I talked to over the last 20 years in clinical practice, it's probably tens of thousands now that that is a primary concern. So Alex's condition is much like ours and anybody else's. I've been through this. I'd be more than happy to share that story. You know, she went to visit her doctor, said she had adrenal fatigue. They pretty much laughed at her and told her it was all in her head and told her she needed to quit Googling, right? Quit talking to Dr. Google. And so she started trying supplements, right? So she started trying different supplements, different things to increase her energy, doing things like energy drinks and other herbs that are excitatory, and really didn't see a lot of change. You know, she could get some short-term relief by, you know, amplifying everything with caffeine. She even tried adrenal health diets, right? So she even tried to eat differently and didn't really see some difference. And she saw that she was really having this emotional and physical toll. And one of the things that she did go through, and this happens a lot, is she latched on to it must be a thyroid issue. So she went and saw a holistic doctor who tested her thyroid and did it all completely, looked at all the different thyroid markers, and told her she did have a sluggish thyroid, and put her on a T3. So T3, just in case anybody doesn't know what this is your active thyroid hormone. So that's the actual key that turns on the engine of every single cell and speeds up your metabolism. So T3, if you give it, essentially should therefore increase your energy. And so she was put on that. And what was really interesting is she started getting heart palpitation. So as soon as she took it, the fatigue didn't get better, but her heart started racing. And so she had some negative side effects to that, even though she really felt like that was her problem. So when I saw her, she really truly believed that this is truly a thyroid issue and that she just needs a different combination. And maybe she just needs some different nutrients to fix her quote unquote thyroid problem. So let me name the issue, what's really going on here, because it's not adrenal fatigue. That's how it presents and how it feels, but that's not really happening. So the real villain here is what we call hypothalamic pituitary adrenal, and I might throw in thyroid, axis problem. So it's also known as HPA, and I would call it HPAT at the end. That's what it's known as. And so what that really means is we have a problem with the directions that are being given to the adrenal glands and often the other sex hormone producing glands in the body. So let me give you a rundown of what's really happening here. So in your brain, you have the hypothalamus and the pituitary. The hypothalamus is your conductor of the show and the director. So it directs what's really happening. It says, hey, I want the show to feel like this, look like this, be like this. I wanted to have this particular experience, right? The pituitary is truly the conductor of the orchestra. It is the one that's going to tell which section of the orchestra, whether it's the winds, the brass, the percussion, to step in and start playing and play at whatever speed and however loud. Now, the hypothalamus and pituitary, particularly the hypothalamus, it takes in information from your world. So it's taking in information from your senses, your smell, your eyes, your ears, taking in chemical information from your environment, what you're eating, what you're coming in contact with, and also from your chemistry. So what happens is the hypothalamus takes in all this information and says, I don't know what's really happening here, but things aren't great. Things aren't wonderful. I need to actually regulate my response to these stressors. And then it tells the pituitary how it wants to change the show to respond to this ongoing onslaught of chemical information and senses information it's getting. And then the conductor, the pituitary, now talks to the adrenal glands, who's the percussion, right? So they really set the speed and the pace of the entire orchestra and say, downregulate, downregulate. You need to slow down. You need to play less fast. You need to play less loud. And then in response to that, often we can get other hormone producing endocrine glands like the thyroid or the sex hormone producing glands to downregulate as well. And what happens is that is a stress regulatory response, and it's usually in response to prolonged, protracted stress. So it is in response to relentless, ongoing, or extended periods of stress. So if we go back to Alex and Alex's experience, Alex could have told you, or she would tell you here if she was here today, that she had probably a full-on decade of stress. Right. She was a single mom for a long period of time. She ended up getting married and had a blended family. And that went like a lot of blended families. It was not easy. It was not consistent. It was, you know, something they had to get through. She had a parent that ended up having an injury that took some additional resources from the family, both financially and both from her own experience and time. And, you know, she had a job that she wanted to get promoted in, and she got promoted into a new position. But the job was even more stressful and required more time, required more energy outside of work. And when she got home, she just felt like she didn't have any gas. So the HPA axis regulatory activity, the dysregulation that's really happening here, is because we've been hitting that hypothalamic controller for so long, saying, I'm not safe. I'm not functioning. It's not that your adrenals can no longer make adrenal stress hormones like cortisol, like adrenaline. That is not what's happening. It is not like your adrenals just shriveled up like a raisin and they've dried up and can't keep up anymore. They're being told not to. They're being told not to because this is part of your body's survival mechanism for recovery. Now, when that happens, we can get a abnormality that can vary over time. So in the beginning, it might be that I am very tired in the morning. My adrenal function is suppressed in the morning. So my early morning cortisol spike is dysregulated. So then I'm low in the morning. So cortisol is what should wake us up in the morning if we didn't set an alarm. So it doesn't come up to its peak where it's supposed to. So I feel like I'm dragging in the morning. So I hit some caffeine, right? We all do it, right? Or if you don't because you're caffeine sensitive, awesome. But many of us, you know, hit that cup or two of coffee and that sort of sends us zooming a little bit. It gives us a little bit of energy and attention. Then we get regulatory activity that, you know, in the beginning, it might be that it's high throughout the day, right? Later on, we get sort of amplified and it stays that way. So we feel like we're sort of amped up. Now, when we finally hit the fatigue pattern, what we see is often that mid-afternoon or early afternoon peak that we should see has now flattened, right? So we don't get the peak where we should, which should happen a couple hours after waking in your mid-morning, and then it should slowly trail off and then go down at night. So if I don't have that peak, I'm going to feel flat all day. And then what then often happens, so phase two to, I would say, phase 2.5, is what we start to see is often we get home and all of the extra things that we have to do, take care of the family, cook dinner, you know, drive somebody to some sort of sporting event or whatever it is you're doing, we might get a little boost after dinner, right? So for those of you that might be like, yeah, I feel the best after dinner, after I ate, you're in a dysregulatory pattern. And then at night, we may have a hard time going to sleep because we get that second wind. So we sit up at night and have what I call the mommy hour, which is where we either have chocolate or wine or both. And we sit up and we cruise the internet or we binge read or we binge watch Netflix. And then we have a hard time going to sleep and staying asleep. Or you start to fall asleep on the couch only to go to bed. And then you wake back up and can't go back to sleep. So all of those things happen. So that's the start of it. And then when you get to the end result of dysregulation, everything's kind of flat. So everything's kind of flat. So the reality is we misattribute the hypothalamic pituitary axis impact of the hypothalamus and the pituitary finally deciding I can't keep up this activity anymore to the adrenals being burned out. And we'll often attribute things like progesterone deficiency to a what they call progesterone steal, which means that your body took that raw material out of the adrenal gland to make cortisol. That's not quite what happens. It does have a preferential pathway. So your body uses the same raw material, a hormone called pregnenolone, and pregnenolone can go down and make progesterone. And then it can also skirt down another roadway and be made into cortisol and then inactivated to cortisone back and forth. Now, depending on how we wired, we may do that more or less because of how we are genetically wired. But the body, through the hypothalamic pituitary directions, will tell the body, hey, forget that progesterone. We need to go drag that sucker down and make some more cortisol and go that other route because I still have stress. So often we also exhibit more progesterone deficiency issues leading to infertility. And then obviously in our lifetime, where we're in our late 40s, early 50s and beyond, it just means that we have less capacity to sleep. We also tend to get very wired and tired. We're exhausted, but we also have zero Fs for everybody. We do not care, and our filter is often torn off. So when we look at this whole adrenal hypothalamic pituitary axis becomes dysregulated, and we have to understand that it is not as simple as taking just a supplement. It is not as simple as, you know, eating adrenal reset diet. All of those things can contribute. I'm not saying that they don't work. Believe me, we use them in clinical practice. And I'm going to give you a little bit of my story. I tried for 15 years to figure out how to supplement my way out of adrenal fatigue, right? And I'm using adrenal fatigue with air quotes around it. Hypothalamic pituitary thyroid sex hormone axis dysfunction. Because the longer this goes, the worse this goes, the harder it is to fix, and the more endocrine glands get involved. Because I can tell you, when I opened our clinic and I had been working 60 to 70 hours and I went back to school for 3.5 years while I did that, the first time, not this last time, I came out of that opening our clinic and I could barely get out of bed. And it took me a good 2 years to recover. And from that point forward, I had to really pay attention to what I'm going to share next with you. And then I had to really understand it. But believe me, in the beginning, I tried every supplement. I was no different than Alex. Anything and everything that was out there, I would try. If my functional medicine doc put me on it, I went on it. I went on thyroid medications. I went on Cortef, which is a replacement for cortisol because you're so low. I did it all, but I couldn't really recover it because it is not that recoverable just by covering up the symptoms. So I want to give you this path out of this hypothalamic pituitary axis, adrenal axis problem. And like I said, if it goes on long enough and becomes dysregulated enough, it will affect your thyroid and it will absolutely affect your sex hormones. And it just makes that entire symphony of hormones more messed up. So here's the good ways. There's a way out.
Hey there. Are you over 40 and finding that a good night's sleep feels like a distant dream? Have no fear, I have cracked the code. I am offering a free ebook, A Woman's Guide to Kick-Ass Sleep, with insights tailored just for you. So if you're ready to dive into the secrets of sound sleep after 40 and wake up refreshed, zip over to sleep.hormoneshelp.com and snag that ebook. Your dreamy sleep awaits.
So the reality is your diet does make a difference. Absolutely. And you cannot live on coffee and egg bites from Starbucks and then, you know, a protein bar at 4 o'clock because you missed lunch, only to go home and eat dinner while you're standing up at the kitchen counter making dinner for everybody else because you're answering emails and then you're getting ready to drive your kids to their sporting events. That does not work. So diet does matter. And I'm going to share exactly how to do it, but we have to do the other parts. So the reality is a significant portion of that hypothalamic control, so think of that as your director in your brain that's pulling the shots, is getting messages from crap you can't control, right? It's getting messages about your body's recovery system. It's getting messages about your light-dark experience. It's getting messages on how much resilience and stress response you're having throughout the day. If you wear an Oura ring, I'll give an example. I wear an Oura ring. I've been wearing one for over 8 years. And what's really interesting is I was looking at it the other day, and I've had a lot of taking care of my mom and all this other stuff. So I was looking at my sleep was pretty good, right? My sleep was pretty good, a little dysregulated because I had my dog wake me up in the middle of the night and those kind of things that happen. But my stressed state throughout the day is less than an hour a day, right? So I don't really have a lot of stress states. So if you have an Oura Ring, it's really cool because it can take all the information like your heart rate variability and heart rate and recovery and exercise and tell you how much you're stressed throughout the day. And it learns more about you over time. So my stress state was low. But because I had been shirking, and I'm being honest, I'd been shirking my meditation and other like relaxation pathway stuff because I was trying to get a really big project done, my resilience was really low. So it has a resilience score. And I was like, huh, okay. So what that was telling me is even though I didn't feel stressed out, and I actually wake up and feel good today, I was able to recover my entire fatigue problem, I had poor resilience. So what does that mean? It means that the things that are going on in your body that you don't necessarily feel, are aware of, and have direct access to have more direction of what the hypothalamus is doing, right? What the hypothalamus is doing. So what that means is we have to do the other stuff that is harder to do. Sleep better. Have mindfulness. Adjust our exercise to adjust to what the adrenal function really is doing and what will help reset the hypothalamus, and stress management. And we have to do a balanced diet, and we can often use herbs that help that out. But the real path to come over this issue of fatigue requires a change in lifestyle. And here's the thing. This is one of the things that I think is the biggest struggle for all people. If we look at every disease state, including things like fatigue, diet and lifestyle are a big driver, right? Everything we die from in the West are driven by diet and lifestyle. And even if you look on the drug, you know, pamphlets, they'll say, hey, if diet and lifestyle doesn't work, then take this drug. So the truth is we have to do diet and lifestyle and all these other pieces to get better, but we have to maintain them or we will end up right back where we were. That's a big reason why diet to lifestyle changes don't work, because we treat them like a short-term diet and then we slide back into the old habits that we had and we get the old body that we created. So the same thing here, we have to develop lifestyle habits that we are going to continue to do. So for instance, for me, one of the reasons why I love the Oura Ring is it requires me to look at it and pay attention to those things that I'm not hyper aware of, like my recovery and resilience. Because I am a person that I'm extremely driven and I can get very single focused and I will drive myself into the ground by just who I am by nature if I don't pay attention to that. So I need that feedback. So your lifestyle things have to be done. So let's talk about what those paths out, like how's the path to fix this? Sleep hygiene. So one of the most important things that regulates your sleep is the light-dark cycle. It's the circadian rhythm. It's getting up when the sun comes up and getting outside and getting exposure to early morning sunlight on your eyeballs, because that actually sets your nighttime regulatory activity. It causes your vitamin D receptors and melatonin receptors to change places and function. So it makes melatonin work better. It's part of the production of vitamin D, and those guys work in opposition. It also helps your body regulate your hunger cycles. Every single cell, including every bacteria in your body, has a clock, and you've got to regulate it. So that means that I have to get early morning sunlight and ideally bright sunlight, and then I need to have amber light at night. I wear Viva Rays glasses. I wear them throughout the evening into the night because that helps bring amber glow, which actually helps tell your brain, ratchet down what's happening and relax. That's why we say you got to stop playing with the phones, get rid of the blue lights, dim your lights. We even have in our bedroom, we have amber bedroom lights that we turn on if we go into the bedroom at night. Yes, it looks a little bit like a 70s, you know, movie set, you know, like Boogie Nights maybe, but the reality is that amber light keeps that relaxation response in check, right? So if I'm getting ready or I'm, you know, doing things in my bedroom, I'm not re-stimulating myself by flipping on a light that's got way too much blue light and green light in it, like LEDs. So we want amber and dark. And then we want to relax the brain by doing something relaxing. That could be meditating, stretching. It could be yoga. It could be reading. Like for me, a big part of my nighttime ritual is to read just a little bit. right? And not off a phone, not off an iPad. That's still going to emit blue light. Even if you change a little bit of the settings to a nighttime setting, it's still got some. So either an old school book or an old school Kindle White, turn to white on black, right? Because that helps relax the body a little bit. And that could be also, you know, whether you take a bubble bath at night with ideally Epsom salt, because that can help relax your body. Magnesium is great for sleep. And it's also regulating that bedroom, making sure it's cold, right? It's easier for you to go to sleep when your core body temperature starts to drop. That's actually what drops you into sleep. And it's also doing things like mindfulness, right? So that mindfulness could be anything. And mindfulness gets a lot of talk, but it's always made to sound like this esoteric thing that you must do, like go sit in lotus and hum, or, you know, do actual meditation, which is a form of mindfulness. Mindfulness is simply being aware and present to what you're doing right here, right now. So you could have an extraordinary mindful practice by washing your face at night, by staying present to the action of washing your face. But you could do breathing exercises. You could do box breathing, you know, 4-count inhale, 4-count exhale, and then slowly extend that length of time up to 8 counts. That is a form of breath work that also helps you be mindful. But what those things do is ratchet down that stress response. It tells the hypothalamus and the pituitary everything is cool. We can do those things to relax. But the other way to get more resilience day to day is to stay present to what you're doing. It's to stay present and mindful. And that's really what mindful means. It means being present. Now you can extrapolate that into 1,000 other things, but at its very core, it's just being present. Exercise. So let's talk about how to pathway out of here. So if I am hypothalamic pituitary adrenal dysregulated, I can't do 2 things. I cannot work out intensely and get more energy, right? So this is not the time to do 45-minute Orange Theory 4 times a week. This is not the time to train for a triathlon or a marathon. This is not the time to hit high-intensity interval 5 times a week. Your body is trying to tell you to chill out. You might get a short-term burst of energy, but the long-term effect is that you're more fatigued. This is also not the time to sit on your butt, even though that's what you probably feel like doing. So we may have to moderate the exercise. So often what I have people do is zone 2 training, which is mild heart rate elevation, getting you into a fat burning zone, doing something you can stay mindful at while you're doing it. I tend to do it on a bicycle because it's easy for me to get that heart rate in that kind of 120 to 130 something range, which is about where my zone 2 range is. And I can maintain it and I can stay present. It's harder for me to do that on ground because I'm not a runner and I either run too fast or I walk too slow. Just the reality of it. So zone 2 is good because it keeps you in a low to moderate stress state. It actually doesn't crank up your stress chemistry. High intensity interval does over the short term. Any kind of endurance work does over the long term. And then weight training, I might do that, but I don't need to spend an hour in the gym, right? So I definitely think weight training is one of the things that has to get integrated in. But again, it's not an hour-long slog in the gym. It might be targeted body parts and just doing moderate exercise. Now, that brings me to the other lifestyle piece. We have to eat correctly to support our stress chemistry. So we need to eat regularly and we need to eat protein at every meal. We need to make sure that we get a high-fiber diet with lots of fruits and vegetables, healthy fats. And we also need to make sure that we're not skipping meals and that we're eating ideally in a longer window. So this is not the time to be doing extreme fasting, right? That is stressful to the body. And particularly in the research looking at older women, we tend to get a stress response more quickly. Our metabolism tends to slow more quickly when we're stressed and also fasting. So I need to eat regularly. I need to eat regularly. And I might need snacks between meals, depending on what my time relationship is with my meals. I am not generally a big snacker. And I don't think snacking is a great way to stoke the metabolism. I think that research has been debunked. Unless you are, you know, training to be a fitness athlete and you're working out intensely every day and you're trying to get, you know, 2,500 to 3,500 calories in to put on muscle. But when I have energy dysregulation, I'm also going to have blood sugar, fat metabolism dysregulation along with it. And it might be a time when I might need a little snack between meals. So we have to pay attention to that. We also can't skip meals because that just stresses your body out more. It's going to raise your cortisol and drive this into the ground. So we have to do all of those things to put it in. Then would be the time to put in your supplementation, your things like ashwagandha, rhodiola, American ginseng, Asian ginseng, holy basil. Those are all adrenal adaptogenic herbs that can help modulate that and give you a little boost of energy throughout the day. And then there's even things like Relora and L-theanine and GABA that can help you kind of downregulate that stress chemistry at night. And so those supplements definitely help, but I got to address those other people and things in my life, because that's the next step. Is this is a perfect time to look at where you should learn to say no. One of the fastest ways to recover your hypothalamic pituitary axis is to learn boundaries. And if you have boundaries, is to exert boundaries. We often get into this position because we don't say no to things we want to say no to. And we feel compelled to do it, either because we're worried about what our family may think about it or people in our environment, and we don't have good boundaries. So we tend to take on more than what we're supposed to. And especially, this is even worse when there are boundaries you should be having with someone else and you didn't do it, because now what you've done is triggered two boundary responses. You're irritated with them because you said yes to them, and then you're irritated with yourself because you didn't say no to them. So the boundary compounding effect is greater. So the last thing is to look in your life and take this opportunity to have those conversations with individuals in your life and say, hey, you know what? I'm trying to recover my function here. I am so fatigued. My brain doesn't work. I can't take that on right now. And I may not ever take it back on because that's not something I want to prioritize. One of the most empowering things you can do, right? And so again, my big thing is I got to address all of those to some degree. I don't have to be a master of all of them, but I probably need to hit all of them at the same time. So I want to empower you to take the next step. So it's now your turn. You can arm yourself with this knowledge. Don't be afraid to advocate for yourself. And small steps can lead to really big outcomes, really big outcomes. So if you're listening to all of this and you're already fatigued and you're like, damn, that sounds like a lot to do. It just sounds like a lot that I need to do. I want you to really think about, what's the one thing I can do today to advocate for myself? You know, is there a thing I've said yes to that I need to turn around and say, you know, giving it more thought, this is not something I can actually prioritize at this time? Is it I need to go outside and spend 10 minutes outside having my tea or coffee, because I'm sure you're having coffee? And, you know, is this a way for me to turn on that circadian rhythm? Maybe that's the only thing I can do that day. Maybe that's the only thing I can do that day. But that's a start, because it's small incremental steps. Sustainable lifestyle steps, sustainable things. As I put those in play, then I can add on the really interesting things that I do with people every day. I mean, my specialty is nutritional biochemistry and understanding particularly how the body responds to what we eat, what we take in supplementally, and then also how the body metabolizes things, especially hormones. So those things can help, but I got to do the other stuff too. And then I want you to really also seek reliable information and advocate for yourself, right? If you have a practitioner or somebody that you're working with or your medical provider and they ignore, dismiss, or gaslight you, they're not your advocate, right? So number one, doctor, the word doctor means teacher, first and foremost. So if your practitioner is not teaching you, right, how to live a better life, how to become healthier, how to do those things, they're missing the point of the actual experience in the actual profession. They're not working on your side. So that's super important. And number three, you need somebody that can advocate and be a partner with you. So if you are missing that, then this is also a good time to seek out somebody who can help, right? In many cases, recovering from fatigue is actually something that does not mean medication, right? Even if somebody is exhibiting thyroid problems, it's usually not thyroid medication that pulls them out of the valley. Right. So the other thing is, if you've been put on thyroid because you have fatigue and you're not getting better, this is it. This is probably why. Because the other thing that happens when we've been stressed for a long period of time is, as we metabolize cortisol, the cortisol metabolites can actually block that thyroid receptor and affect the function of your actual thyroid hormone. So think of it this way. You've got hundreds of keys circulating in your bloodstream, and they're not actually clicking into any of the cells because your body is trying at its last effort to keep your metabolism and slow things down so you can recover. One of the ways it does that is by making reverse T3. But another reason is it will actually slow the adrenal function, and the adrenal metabolites will block that thyroid issue. So I want to motivate you to think about that, because you can absolutely have resilience and healing powers. And you can do this. I did it for myself. I recovered from pretty severe fatigue, where I was only allowed to really work about 2.5 days a week for a while. I had to really recover. I tried to do it, like I said, I tried to do it with supplements and other things first. And then I had to really bite the bullet and really step into the lifestyle pieces. And that was close to 20 years ago. And it has made a huge difference. So think about that. Think about the small interventions you can do. When you've done all those things, when you've really done all those things and you started working on your diet and you still have problems, this is when I would seek somebody to really help you with that next step. Look at supplementation, look at getting tested and getting some more data so you can take the right steps with the right healthcare professional. So you've got this, you can recover from your fatigue. So remember the ad about the free ebook, The Women's Guide to Kick-Ass Sleep? I want you to click the link below in the show notes or go to sleep.hormoneshelp.com to download it and get your Z's, because I want you to take that very important step of improving your sleep so you can improve your fatigue. Thank you for listening to Menopause Mastery. I'll catch you next week.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Menopause Mastery podcast. You are why I'm here, and I am so very grateful. Hit subscribe so you don't miss any wisdom on creating the most exceptional life on our terms. If this episode has helped you in any way, please share it with a friend to spread the love, and together we rise. You can follow me on social media at Betty Murray, PhD, and you can reach me online at BettyMurray.com.